the king of in between.
Yeah. That is Garland Jeffries from the documentary, Garland Jeffries, the King of In Between. And with us is Claire Jeffries, who made the film, and will be conducting an event, a screening, if you will, at the Little Town School of Music on June 28th. Claire, I just got to tell you, I love the documentary.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you took the time to watch it.
Oh, are you kidding? Absolutely. It was fantastic. his music, his music is spectacular. And I think, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I knew a little about Garland Jeffries, but I'm afraid that that's a common denominator to a certain extent. Not with people in the music industry, not with people like Bruce Springsteen or, you know, Graham Parker. You know, they put him on an equal billing, you know. But I guess the thing is, he just never had, I get this from your documentary now, correct me if I'm wrong, he never had, quote unquote, and this is a very commercial term, a hit, you know, right?
Yeah, you know, the closest thing I think he came to a hit in America was a cover song of that song, What Does It Take?
Oh, the Junior Walker and the All-Star Talk.
Yeah. And he did a beautiful version of that, yes. Yeah. And he, you know, he really did a great job with that. And people sometimes thought, oh, wasn't that your song? And so, you know, it's. I'm so glad you watched it because, I mean, I could go on and on about the mysteries and the vagaries of why some artists that are talented break through and achieve great success, and others that may be, as you said, equally as talented,
if not more.
But for so many reasons, they don't have the right combination of luck, pluck, management, attitude, timing. There's so many things that have to come together. And in making this film, I really spent a lot of time thinking about that, not just for musicians, but for everyone. I think all of us, and yourself probably included, your career in radio, there's certain things that came together for you that maybe didn't for other people. And you look at the arc of your life and you say, this is my story. This is how it all went down.
Right,
but you don't necessarily, I think anyone who takes complete credit for their success is being dishonest. Because,
totally.
Yeah, and very often there is someone who mentored you, who gave you a break, who helped you, who were in the right place at the right time.
Yep.
And, you know, Garland had a lot of opportunities. It's not that he never had good opportunities. He just, for whatever reason, could not capitalize on them sufficiently to reach, you know, success. But, you know, what I tried to show in the film, and I hope you saw that, was just because you don't have the success of financial riches and great fame and that you're selling out arenas, that doesn't mean that you are not a success in your life. And that's what I hope to people take away from the film.
Do you have I mean, I know a little bit about the movie industry. Do you have has somebody purchased it yet? Are they going to distribute it or any of that kind of thing? A streamer?
Well, you know, what we did was sort of typically stop and start. We crowdfunded it. Mm-hmm. I got independent investors, and it took a really long time to finish it. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but I'll tell the listeners that whilst I was making the film, Garland's Alzheimer's was progressing. And so now he's in very late stage Alzheimer's and doesn't really grasp what's happening with the film and that it's screening. But to answer your question, we are doing what's called self-distribution, which sounds, as somebody said, like you're selling DVDs out of the back of your car. But in fact, it's more and more what people are doing because the film industry is in such a rocky place. And
yes,
everybody's, people are not going to theaters and they're not supporting independent films. They're going to a Marvel, a big blockbuster,
or else
they're staying home in their comfortable apartments or houses and watching it on their own big screens and without having to battle. So we are going to go to streaming hopefully in August.
Okay.
And we'll hopefully be on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes, and Vudu, which is, I guess, Fandango at home or something. But anyway, so that's all happening, and we're doing some additional screenings besides this one in Chicago. We just did 6 days here in New York City, and so we're doing some theatrical, but we did a bunch of festivals, and, it's just been a long road, but I'm very happy it will be available on streaming because I think people can find it. I mean, I've had a lot of fans that are not in the few areas where it's playing, and they say, "Oh, when can I watch it?" And I say, "Hey, hold on, hopefully we're getting it." And so it's been great.
You know, we've referenced a couple of times that he came close but never really broke through in the measurement of having commercial hit material, so to speak. And as I was watching the documentary, it struck me that, first of all, his subject matter, most of it, in my opinion, was had a message of a racial context. In the whole King of In Between. And that clip I played from the intro of the film, between the white and the black, and that's not really the kind of thing that big record companies
lights up the airwaves.
You know what I'm saying? Every once in a while, a Janis Ian will sneak through with something like Society's Child but it's not something that you hear. On commercial radio, so to speak.
I absolutely think that was a big part of his challenge, if you will, because I think he very stubbornly kept writing about these issues, and sometimes he would use different genres to get those messages out, but he literally never strayed too far from that. And you're absolutely right. I think that's maybe the main reason that he was not commercially successful. And, I think in the end, there were times when, we've been a couple since 1981. So I've seen a lot of changes. And there were times when he would try to write what we would call a hit, and he just wasn't that kind of a writer. And, I think there's a lot, there's a great message in the film about integrity and, like I say, acceptance, coming to a point in your life, not even necessarily at the end of your life, but later in your life where you look back and you say, okay, chances are I'm not going to ever write the great American novel, or I'm never going to, you know, have the mansion on the hill. But I have wonderful friends and family, and I'm not hungry, and, you know, there's just so many things to be grateful for, and I think that he really came to that later in life. So
we're talking to Claire Jeffries, who's a filmmaker and the wife of Garland Jeffries. The documentary is Garland Jeffries, the King of In Between. We'll do more when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, just a taste of Garland Jeffries and a song called Cool Down Boy, which was a result of everybody telling him to cool down. So, I mean, like with the record company and just the whole... the whole nine yards, which may be one of the reasons that did not progress any further than it did. We're talking to Claire Jeffries, a filmmaker behind this great documentary called Garland Jeffries, the King of In Between. I want to make sure we get all of this in. There will be a screening of this film, Garland Jeffries, the King of In Between, directed by our guest, Claire Jeffries. Saturday, June 28th at 7:30 at the Old Town School of Folk Music at 4544 North Lincoln. There's a $25 entry plus a fee. And from what I see here, those tickets are at www.oldtownschool.org. There will be a screening. There will be a special acoustic tribute by Nicholas Tremulous, which is... that's going to be just fantastic. Obviously a screening and then a post-film discussion. So that sounds like a really great night of great music, as a matter of fact. Because
I'm hoping it's going to be great. And, you know, Nick Tremulous is a Chicago musician, and then the Q&A... will be moderated by none other than John Langford, who's another Chicago legend, and my editor slash producer, Evan Johnson, lives in Chicago, so he'll be on the panel with me, and it's going to be really great, and I'm really excited about it. And Old Town is such a wonderful organization, and I'm really stoked about it, and I think it's going to be great. And, oh, I just lost my train of thought, but it was something about, oh, I know, in the documentary,
yes.
Did you catch the scene with Garland and Sonny Rollins?
Oh, yeah.
Well, do you know where that was done? In Chicago's studio, TV studio, and it was...
Channel 11 when they did the soundstage?
Yes.
Uh-huh. See?
I watched it.
Come on now.
Look at that. I mean, that was pre-me, but
everybody knows here at the First Certain Time, getting on soundstage itself over at 11 was like, this is a huge deal. I mean, soundstage was gigantic. And...
it really was.
Yeah. And I just want to say amongst other things, we're trying to explain why Garland Jeffries never really broke through. But there were times where it sure looked like it. I believe it was in 1977, Rolling Stone magazine said Garland Jeffries was the most promising artist of that year. That's a big deal. You would think that that might be a springboard.
A turning point, exactly. Yeah,
but it wasn't.
You would think that soundstage was. You might have heard the announcer saying, and he's poised to become America's next big thing. And so that was a moment in time where it really felt like he was on the precipice of a breakthrough. No. And it just... for whatever reason, it didn't happen, and we were making the film, and we saw his career as a series of you know, excitement and peaks, and then he would retreat, and he would sort of pull away from the record industry and the challenging nature of it. And also in the film, Springsteen he had asked Garland to participate in these benefit shows in Asbury Park, and it was in 2001, so right after 9/11.
Yeah.
And Bruce was saying, you know, Garland has this great song called New York Skyline, and he also says that when Garland told him he hadn't performed in many years, he was astonished. And I thought about that because it was true. It's like riding a bike or something. When you stop and you pull away from it, it becomes, or exercising or anything, mm-hmm. you know, it becomes harder to envision yourself doing it. And the longer you stay away, the less you feel like, oh, I was pretty good at that. I should just pick that up again and just dust myself off. And I think that the years just rolled by. I don't think he really meant them to, but they did.
I don't think anybody really means for the years to roll by, but they do. I understand that. I understand totally what you're saying. I just wanted to say, too, not only did Rolling Stone magazine in 1977 say he was the most promising artist of the year, he was part of a question on Jeopardy. That was like, that is so crazy. I mean,
I know.
Come on, who gets to be a question on? It's in the, well, by the way, it's in the documentary. You got to see it.
It's really great. And I said to somebody, I said that little segment of the Jeopardy question sort of encapsulates his entire career. Like, we could have made the film about 1 minute long because he is, you know, it's like he's cool enough to be a Jeopardy question.
Oh, yeah.
But he's obscure to the point that all three contestants look like, what are you talking about? I mean, none of them even looked like they were struggling to come up with the answer. None of them had any idea.
You know, I think I sort of said earlier in this that, this is sort of a simplistic statement, if people who know, there are people who know, and then there are people who don't. And if they don't, they really don't. You know what I mean? It's not like they avoided it. It just never entered their consciousness, or they weren't around to hear any of the music or anything like that.
They missed it. Yeah. And I think that's true of so many artists today too. Somebody will say to me, I love so-and-so, and I have never heard of them. Because, partly because I just don't hear, I'm not in the swim as much, but I also think that we're so siloed now that you don't, you know, back in the day when I was a kid, there were a few radio stations, a few TV stations, and that was where you heard what was happening,
right?
You know, and it wasn't like a Spotify where you go and you find some artist that you really like and you just find them and you listen to them because you can. I remember you couldn't do that before. You had to
sure
go
couldn't.
To the store and buy a record. Anyway, I am so pleased that you enjoyed the film.
It really
makes me happy.
And I want to thank you, Claire, for coming on, and I hope it's a great screening over at the Old Town School of Music, and I hope the film goes a long, long way. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Sean. Appreciate it.
You betcha.